Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast in our new lovely, comfortable studio. If you're watching this on video, Maka, you are back. The man here is back from Europe again.
I love the intros you give me again. Yes, again. It feels weird. I got into the commentary, you know, last night, two nights ago, whenever it was, and Keno was like, I can't believe you've gone to Europe, you've come back, because I worked on the first five stages, obviously, of the Vuelta. Even my wife was like, how long is the Vuelta? It feels like it's been going for a month. So it feels weird, but it feels good. And it's good to be back. And I'm loving this layout, but I'm missing Grace.
Yeah. She's
where is she?
She's taking a week off. She's what? Allowed. She's allowed. No, she's got a big, big, big season coming up as well, because we've a personal, you know, having the baby and also all the sun cream.
The sun cream. I saw big summer coming, and it's going to be a big summer because generally when it's a hot European summer, Australia seems to have a belter.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
We might be flogging sun creams for
it. And we saw it on the roads of the Vuelta no later than yesterday. Mm. The temperature, 44 degrees at the finish. And let's talk racing. Brennan.
Yes.
Superstar of the sprint. Are we surprised? We're not surprised. I said it multiple times that Visma doesn't really have a culture of sprinting, but they've got a gem.
They've got a gem, and he's you know, I mean, let's first and foremost talk about the Vuelta. He's killing it. Four stage wins, six in total for the team.
He's only equal Gavrila on the number of wins on the start of a Vuelta.
A debut. Gaviria was the Giro, I think. He's impressive. And I asked Gero, you know, because he's really more credentialed than I am, but, you know, where's the future for Matthew Brennan? What's the crystal ball for the next 5 years? Because he's still, I think they're still working him out and he's still working himself out. So,
But they have to work the culture out as well for someone like him. They have to make some room for someone like him.
Well, they should. I mean, I think he's, you know, one of his, apart from potentially winning stages of the Tour de France, yeah, something like Flanders, Milan-San Remo, and that's what I'm echoing Gero's words here. But, yeah, they're races that he is absolutely, you know, should be earmarking in the next 2 to 3 years. He's that good.
And Visma are dominating that sort of bubble here, because we'll talk about him in a sec, but Van Aert also two wins, but three assists on Brennan. So, you know, we talk a lot about how Alpecin used a lot and Philipsen used a lot of Mathieu Van Der Poel as an assist in a lead-out sprint. Van Aert is playing an amazing role for someone like Brennan today.
Yeah, and, you know,
very similar.
Again, we discussed it last night. Van Aert is, I mean, it's so good. It's like he's back to his very best. And remembering, what was it, two seasons ago when he crashed out of the Vuelta while he was dominating. So it's great he's back now and, you know, touch wood, fingers crossed, he gets through unscathed these next...
Is that real wood?
Five stages. I think it's veneer.
Yeah.
looks good, though. For a guy who can win, because not always the guys that can win like that are great domestiques. He's both.
Yeah.
He's an amazing super domestique.
I mean, it's a guy that can win a sprint, also win on Ventoux twice.
Yeah, yeah.
He's gone out.
He's phenomenal. So... I mean, there's every chance he'll get another stage win himself, you know, between now and the finish.
So just on Brennan itself, like, there's been already a lot of talks about the Tour de France next year. Mm-hmm. We don't know the whole route.
We know it starts in the UK.
Exactly. The route will be really revealed end of October, as usual. But in terms of the start, we know it's in the UK. We also know that the first stage could be for someone like him.
Yeah.
When you're British, a British rider like Brennan, your tour, the biggest race in the world, starts somewhat in your backyard. Are we allowed today, even now, right now, to sort of dream of a yellow jersey from a British rider on British road? And how much would that do for cycling as a whole, but how much would that do to British cycling? Because they need this. They need this big time as well.
Yeah, no, definitely we can dream. We should, because that's all it is at the moment. Yeah. But the fact that he said it in his post-stage interview, and Jeff Kinney, who he's really good at, he's questioning Jean-Francois, you know, that was a question he asked. And Matt Brennan he's starting to get confident. And so he should. Four stage wins. He's like, yeah, it's something that I said to the team. And he didn't say when, but he said it was quite a while ago, I think. So he has said this probably at least 2 years ago. He's 2 years with the team now. He's in his second year. So when he's joined the team, he has said, he's put his hand up. They probably didn't take him too seriously then. They probably were like, all right, he's up, little man.
I think they are now.
I think they are now, and so they should be. Why? And even with Jonas Vingegaard, the reality is you would take him because they take Van Aert, they take Laporte, obviously, if he's in good form. You take Brennan because he's actually more than a sprinter. He can assist someone like Jonas Vingegaard in crosswinds, in lower climbing sort of stages. He's going to be even better next year, you would think, in terms of a complete cyclist. So, no, he's a real deal. And
so I've got a question for you here, though. What does Jakobsen do in this whole thing? Jakobsen just signed with Visma.
Well, he thanks his lucky cards that he's just signed with them.
Yeah.
I mean, jokes aside.
What does he bring?
Yeah, I mean,
different races?
Yeah, well,
lead that role?
I don't know. I've got to be really honest, and it's a bit brutal, but he has had a bit of a shock of almost two seasons now, Jakobsen. I was surprised Visma signed him with what they've got.
Mm-hmm.
And you've hit it on the head. Where does he fit in? Because they do a couple of race programs. They send Van Aert somewhere and they send Brennan elsewhere, along with Vingegaard in the mix and Laporte and so on.
Because Laporte signed again until 2028 or 2027.
Yeah, I mean, they've picked up Jakobsen at a bargain price, I'm sure. Bargain basement price. And look, good on them that they still believe in him. And, you know, so I rate that.
Because my thinking was more around, are we seeing without noticing that the team is transforming? Because Vingegaard has already said, he's already hinted that he might not be interested in a tour next year. He might not be interested in the race that he's already won. So therefore, he wants to try something else. And therefore, you know, the team needs to reinvent themselves. They need to have a strategy. Are we seeing in front of our eyes without really noticing that Visma are transforming the tactics?
Well, when's Vingegaard's contract till? I should have looked at that. I saw a rumor, you know, there's loads of, you know, fluff that you see on the web these days, but there was one with Vingegaard in a Uno X jersey, which would sort of make sense in the future, long-term future for him. You know, it's a Norwegian team, but of course, Scandinavian, that's the flavour of that squad. So, and Tor Hushovd at the helm, he'll be pretty shrewd, and I would no doubt think that there'd at least be some sort of discussion going on. Even if he's got a couple of years left on his contract, it wouldn't surprise me at all that Uno X are at least just inquiring.
Yeah, sniffing around.
Where you're at, are you happy? You know, are you open to a discussion at some point? It'd be silly not to.
Do you know what? You heard it first here. We love a good gossip.
We love the gossip.
Let's go back to the race on the Vuelta because we have a leader, Enric Mas, leading this race. He's got 2 minutes ahead.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Yeah, cool.
I go away at the end of stage five. Yeah. Pog's in perfect, normal. The cycling world is normal. Pog is leading. He's winning. It's also normal because Brian Cocker, of course, has not won a stage. He's never won a stage of a Grand Tour. I go overseas, a poggy rock, because that's what we started calling it with my client said I had away, and we were nervous ourselves. There was a few poggy rocks on Mont Ventoux, by the way. A rock takes out Pog. Brian Cocker wins his first Grand Tour stage in his 30s ever, which was, that was awesome. I was so happy for him. And the race has turned on its head, and Enric Mas potentially could win his very first Grand Tour, of course, his home tour. So my head's just been exploding.
Do you know what's sad, Maga? Is as soon as Poggi crashed, I thought of you. I thought, he's only gone, and then the whole world is crumbling.
You know,
what's going on here?
And I'm sure people will relate to this, you know, you mad cycling fans out there. You think when you go to Europe, your finger on is going to be even more on the pulse.
Yeah.
But I was actually really busy running this trip, right? And so I've got another tipping comp that I do all year round with a bunch of friends, riding friends here.
Oh, do you know?
Yes, I do. It's a closed-up shop, yes.
Okay.
You get one invite per year. No. And one of the tipsters, she's messaged on the group chat, and it was, you know, midnight, so kudos to her because she was up watching, and she goes, oh, no. And I'm like, what's happened? So, because I didn't have a chance to even watch it, and I was on normal time.
Yeah.
So then I heard, and it was devastating because we just love Pog. But, you know, this is professional cycling, and even Pog is not invincible. Mm-hmm. And that's also why we love him. So it's opened the door for Enric Mas. Can Primoz Roglic even dream of a fifth?
Felix Gall as well.
And Felix Gall is having the season of his life. So it's turned out to be still an exciting bike race.
So in terms of where we are now, Mas is leading the Tour. It's 2 minutes 06.
2:06, yep. And then 2:10 to Roglic, yep.
Yeah, so you got 2:06 to Gall and 2:10 to Roglic. There's Carapaz as well, 4 minutes down. But let's just focus on the trio at the minute. He's the winner here. He's the winner of this Vuelta here. And my question is more around, there's a TT down the line in a couple of days. The TT is not the forte of someone like Enric Mas. Felix Gall, though, is not bad at TT. Primoz Roglic is pretty hot at TT.
Yeah.
So are we likely to see some changes in that trio in the next couple of days? And my further question on this one, can Carapaz, because can Carapaz do a Carapaz?
Yeah.
Sneak out a win just at the last few massive climbs that are after the TT.
Yes to everything you said. And I'll just give you a snapshot. Let's go back memory lane here. We were talking about Steven Kruiswijk last night. Final season, 39 years of age, I think. He's ridden for the one team, Visma, legend. Remember when he was going to win the Giro back a number of years ago now? They went across the top of the Stelvio. There was 2 meters of sheet of ice, snow. He hit that snow, crashed heavily, got back up, chased. But his Giro, he did not win the Giro. And he was not going to lose it. Nibali at that point was about 4 minutes down, I think in fourth position. Nibali went on to win the bike race. Mm-hmm. Chavez, I think, finished second or third. It turned on its head, just like that. So all things considered, Enric Mas probably should win. He looks like he's the more dominant, even though there's a TT. He probably shouldn't lose 2 minutes to either. He won't lose 2 minutes to Felix Gall. I think they'll time trial similar.
Yeah.
But you just don't know what could happen. And for that reason, Carapaz is not out of it either. So can happen.
Yeah, I don't know why, but as much as I would love Enric Mas to actually win the Vuelta, and for the years of what he's done in cycling and him being a pure climber also, like he's a purist of the climbers, that would be beautiful for a Spaniard to win the Vuelta.
It's I'll a long time.
You know, it's a long time since a Spaniard won the Vuelta.
When Contador was retiring and Kino and I were on the ground that year, final stage in Madrid, and Contador got the big send-off, and you know, they allowed him to ride ahead of the peloton before the circuits. And then he was riding beside Enric Mas, and he pointed to him and said, "This is the future. This is the future." And Enric Mas was a Neo Pro or second year, and looked like a baby.
He's his manager as well.
Yeah. So, you know, but he was touted as the next big Spanish hope. Yes, he's had a great career, Enric Mas, but still he probably didn't live up to the expectations of many. So this would be a bit of a crowning glory for him.
I'm feeling Carapaz on this one. I think Carapaz.
Really?
I might be totally wrong.
Something has to go wrong.
Yes,
I think that's when I talk about that whole.
Based of Vuelta as well.
Well, something can go wrong. Something went wrong for Pog. Something's gone wrong for others. So, but something has to go wrong, I believe, for Enric Mas to lose. So.
So further question here, and it draws my thinking on a great article on Cycling News, actually, from Pipa York. Has Movistar suddenly got good at tactics?
Just got lucky because Pog crashed.
Next?
I don't think so. Look, obviously, you know, honestly, as you know, I've missed 8 days of the race being away. Like I literally didn't see much at all. So I can't comment fully on that, but I don't think so. I think to be where credit's due, Mas is in good shape.
I was going to put, Whitey's making the changes and all this sort of thing. I was going,
I'm not giving Whitey an easy armchair success to that. No, but look, I think that last night there was a moment where it just reminded me of the Valverde days where Movistar were lined up. They weren't on the front, but they were lined up right there in a commanding position. You know, they got the red jersey. So it's good to see. It's good to see Movistar back. And I'd hate to see them go back to those old tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they will because they've reshaped their squad a bit as well with directors, and you mentioned Matt White. So no, I'm sure they've made little tweaks.
Okay.
So it probably has helped a little bit. But he was already showing that he was the second best in the race before Pogge crashed
out.
Yes,
true.
So he's showing that he's in great shape, which is good.
Let's just spend a second on Primoz Roglic. He's won the Vuelta four times. He's going for a record-breaking five victories on the Vuelta, which would be amazing. And it would be very fitting for how important Roglic is for our current sport, today's sport.
Yeah.
But one thing, though, and you keep mentioning this over the years, you're making an imprint in my brain, but is he really getting better in a third week, Roglic? We know, I said wrongly, and I said it in his pod, I thought he was cooked before starting the Vuelta, he had a big crash.
He had a very un,
you know,
not an ideal lead-in, did he?
Absolutely.
With injuries and crashes 2-3 weeks out.
So how is he going?
Well, he's blown himself away. He's more or less said that he's in such good shape. And he's like, they still see me as a threat,
yeah.
The first two.
He's the first surprise.
If he produces in 2 days' time, if he produces one of his better TTs and Enric Mas doesn't produce a good one, nor does Felix. Well, Felix Gall's only got 4 seconds on Primoz. So Primoz is going to overtake Gall. I would say definitely
in the TT.
But there's a chance he could put himself back in the red.
Yeah.
So then what happens? The dynamic changes, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Massively. And suddenly Roglic will say, I've won four, I can win five. This is my home tour.
Yeah.
You might be Spanish, but I've won four of these, mate.
Yeah.
For me, Roglic is the big threat.
Okay.
He's the bigger threat. And again, I haven't seen some of the mountain stages, but I know that Enric Mas has just taken little snippets out of Roglic. Mm-hmm. But he's still a big threat for me.
Yeah, because 2:10 or 2:11, whatever it is, it's actually nothing.
And at the back end of the season, the back end of a 3-week bike race, and the Giro is a bit like this, suddenly you can just falter on one particular day and it can all unravel. So, no, he's not home and hosed yet, Mas, for sure.
The other point of discussion, which I'm very keen to actually see your opinion on this, is a bit more dated, but there's a new Slovenian on the stage.
Yes.
He's won a stage.
I did see his stage win, actually.
Like,
yeah.
he's as young as Pogge when Pogge made his mark.
Yep.
And I keep reminding, I remember you saying, we are seeing the future here with Tadej Pogacar.
Yeah.
When he first did his mark at the Vuelta, are we seeing the future here with Jakob? And is he really the next Pogge? Well, a lot can happen in between, but from what you can see, from what you can guess, is that and what the hell is going on in Slovenia for them to be coming out with all these sort of riders?
Isn't it? Well, firstly, on that
success
the end
breeds
of that,
success
breeds success. So
isn't it
exciting for Slovenian cycling? And they've got such a role model on and off the bike in Pogge. So in some ways, it's no surprise they're going to breed. Now, they're a small country. They're a small country in size. They're a small country, smallish in population, you know.
A lot of mountains, 3-4 million, a
lot of mountains, a beautiful country. So, he is part of the next future, you would think. In what shape or form, who knows? To try and compare him to Pogge, I think, would be unfair of us to do it because, you know, you set this incredibly, almost impossible standard to follow. But it's exciting. It's exciting, the fact that he's so young. He won that stage. He soloed in. It's really exciting. Mm. And just exciting for that whole new generation coming through that we're seeing. You know, we're seeing some of them at Tour de l'Avenir. We're seeing some of them in the World Tour already.
Yeah.
And in both the men and the women, it's these young riders. You know, it's pretty cool.
And for him, for Jakob, he's got a lot of role models as well he can bank on.
Yeah.
It's not just Pogge. He can be the next Roglic.
Yeah.
He can be the next Mohoric.
Yes.
There's actually a lot, or Metzgev. There's a lot of riders in
that
country.
It's quite as amazing. You forget, actually, the talent pool that they've got.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
Yeah, they punch way above their weight.
100%. Okay, now let's talk about a different subject. But before we move on, who wins this Vuelta? Like right now. The next podcast, we will have you and I. The podcast will be finished.
Mas.
Who wins this?
Mas is doing it. He's doing it. I think it's a great story. I'm going with heart, but I think I'm going with head as well. I just think he'll do enough in the TT and he'll probably take a bit more time on Rog.
Okay. Yeah. Let's now move on to a different other subject. The main one for us, Sarah G is back.
Sarah G
is back racing.
Yes.
400 odd days without racing.
I actually can't believe it's been over a year.
Yeah.
I was convinced she started the season.
I cannot believe it. Yeah,
it's crazy.
Agree.
No, it's good. It's so good for her. It's I'm just so happy. I'm just happy that she'll be back racing. It's
Can I just throw a few questions here, though? 400 days off the bike. She's coming back at the tail end of the season. There's the World Championship. There's not actually much happening on the women's calendar at the World Tour level before the World Championship. So, one, it's going to be hard to think she's going to be making the cut for the team in the World Championship, but you never know.
Yeah.
But why now? Could she not have waited for making a big impact in maybe the nationals or the Australian scene? Or what's the, I mean, I put inverted commas here, but like, what is the urgency of her starting again at the tail end of the season?
Well, I don't.
And it might be obvious for cycling fans, but for non-cycling fans, it's a bit less obvious.
Yeah. So, look, I don't think there is an urgency. I think when you've had that long out with that fractured of her femur, and then she had complications and had to get reoperated on, just to give the backstory to that in context. So there's, I would say definitely there's no urgency. I think it's more that she's ready. The doctors have given her the all clear. And so you've got to start. When you've had 400 days out and you know the first month or two are going to be difficult in terms of your form is obviously going to be right off. So it's actually good for her to get the ball rolling for next year.
So still it's next year in season.
Mind. Oh, 100%. I don't think she will be looking to achieve anything rather than the joy of being able to train properly and race properly. She'll suffer out the last couple of months, but it'll kickstart her 2027 season. Yeah. So that's good. Look, the big question mark, though, I think for her and for us, is that she's out of contract.
Yes.
Her contract's up.
Can I add on this? She's out of contract, and the team she's currently in has evolved a lot.
Yep.
They've won a lot without her.
Yep.
They've got Kim LeCourt as the new person.
Kim LeCourt is the dominant rider of that squad.
So does she still fit in that team?
I think she moves on. I think the rumours are she'll be moving on. We don't know where. So the question is where, and does Liv Lawler come into it? And then the other question is, or the other, I guess, my thought process is that she doesn't have a lot of leverage now, Sarah. You know, previously she would have had...
And we know you listened to this, Sarah. To this podcast.
Yeah, and she's aware of this, I'm sure. So her manager, they've got to really think about, you know, well, they've got to look at their options first and then obviously think about what is the best fit for her. Because I think if she can come back in 27 back to her very best, she can be a dominant force once again. And, you know...
Is Liv Lawler the best fit for her, do you think?
Like, I don't know. We know some of the staff at that squad. And Jess Allen, I think, is a fantastic... You know, she's a fantastic person, Jess Allen. And so I think her being there alone, you know, just for psychological reasons and those sort of mentoring reasons, someone like Jess Allen, I think, would be great for Sarah. But in terms of the overall team, well, we don't know what other new riders are going to go to that squad yet.
Yeah.
So, but is it time for Sarah to come home to an Aussie team? You know, maybe it is.
Surely they would have flirted, inverted comma, with her for years.
I think they wanted her previously.
Did they? Okay.
I think very early days. I can't remember when, whether it was even as far back as Tibco or Movistar. I'm sure there was talk that Liv Lawler wanted her in some shape or form. And the other question is, are they interested in her now still? Who knows?
Yeah.
And what teams are? So
And what's happening to this whole outfit, men and women, in the future as well?
Yeah.
Are they building? Are they not building? Are they? What's happening as well?
We touched on it last night with the men's at least, and it's the same for the women's. Yeah, we're being told that there's a new investor / sponsor. Jerry is staying involved and involved, I think, financially, so that's good. So their future is sort of secured, but they're not announcing any big signings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real watch this space at the moment.
Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, but anyway, look, the bottom line, we can speculate is all we want with Sarah. The great news is She's back. She's back. Absolutely. Racing. So that's really good. So good luck, Sarah. Go
absolutely. Well. And we know we'll be watching you in a very, very positive way. We want you to succeed, Sarah. And we love you so much. So it comes from my heart, and I believe I speak on your behalf.
We might have to get ourselves down to, and this can be a good segue, we might have to get ourselves down to the teardrop. The crit summer season.
Do you know this is where we met Sarah Gigante a long time ago? She was world champion in the junior. Yeah. So Australian champion in the junior.
Yeah. And, world champ. Yeah.
We saw her with a jersey and so on. And it's where I first met Sarah Gigante. That's yonks ago. We were both looking a lot younger. And I don't think we were wearing glasses at the time, you and I.
No, I know. It's sad times.
Somebody else that is back, but this time in Australia, will be Voss. Voss is coming back to the Gravel Worlds.
Yes.
Gravel Worlds will be on SBS as well. And that is an amazing news. You are going to head down there.
I'm excited to head in that up. Yeah.
Voss in the Gravel World. She wants to reclaim that jersey. She's been world champion before. How amazing of a news that is for her, but also for us, for the event, for SBS.
Well, I was thinking this morning, when we're going through our topics to discuss, and I thought, you know what I'd love? I'd love for her to win, because my line of questioning will be, Mariana, for the last 5 years, I'm embarrassing myself because I've said that you're towards the back end of your career,
but
and now you're world champion. Because she is. She's just one of the greatest, isn't she? And she's so humble. She's such a pro on and off the bike. And, it's a credit to the event, and it's great, isn't it, for cycling and Gravel Worlds won in Australia, in WA, and the fact that a superstar like her comes. I mean, she will be the headline act, I think.
Yeah,
100%. It's cool.
Someone has made a big impact on the Gravel World is Tiffany. And she just announced a retirement as well. Is it effective right now? Is it effective?
I don't know, actually. I saw the announcement, but I'm not sure. But I'm presuming end of the season.
How important she's been in actually democratizing as well the gravel on the social scene, and she's been really at the forefront of that sport as well.
Yeah, she has. I mean, Tiff's been she's a stalwart of Australian women's cycling, and she won Het Nieuwsblad, possibly her biggest sort of certainly one day victory in her career. She's been around for years, so many national teams, worlds, I think Olympics as well. So, and as you said, their own gravel race over in Adelaide, up in the Adelaide Hills there the last 2-3 years now. So, she's been a star of the sport, and, someone that I hope in retirement we get to celebrate her, whether it's at TDU because she's an Adelaide native. I think that'd be fitting for someone like her. But she's been a role model for some young women coming up as well, which is fantastic.
Mental toughness. Absolutely. Yeah. So big shout out to Tiff as well. Before we talk about the World Championship, quick note as well. Tadej Pogacar has signed until 2032.
I saw that.
With his team.
So into his 30s, that means, doesn't
it? So it also means, which he's always said, he wants sort of finish his career on the Olympics in LA, which are 2032. No, sorry, that's Brisbane.
No, that's 28.
That's 28.
LA is 28.
So
isn't it?
You surprised that he's going on to 2032? He's going 4 years.
I am a little bit,
Which will be the Olympics in Brisbane?
Yes, I am. That'd be cool. I mean, if he retired, imagine if he just announced, we'd be shocked and sad.
We'll do a special pod if he retires now.
Well, but he's already given us so much.
Yeah.
And look at his CV. It's off the charts. So if he retired, at the end of next year, I'd just say he's the greatest. Mic drop, mate. Thanks so much for coming to our sport. You probably could have chosen 10 other sports. to me, he really is the greatest.
But potentially, there's another 6 years of Tadej Pogacar in a professional peloton.
Like, what's he going to do?
At least on paper, that's what it says.
Yeah. I mean, there is an element to me that will be surprised that if he lasts that long.
Yeah.
Not because he's not good enough, but to be at the top like that.
Do you know what that means, though?
Yeah.
That means he's... And correct me if I'm wrong, but he's potentially just at the mid-mark of his professional career. When did he turn pro? 18? 19?
Yeah, 19, I think.
2019?
Yeah. In terms of the year, he was 19, wasn't he?
He was 19. So when was this?
So like, what is he now, 27?
Mathematically,
He's almost midway.
Somewhere halfway through his career.
That's scary.
Scary when you think about it. Yeah?
Imagine if he gets better.
I mean, give or take a few years. But
surely he can't get any better. Surely he can't. Imagine if he starts winning bunch sprints at the Tour de France. imagine Kev makes a third comeback.
Yeah, exactly.
And Pog's like, I'm the new sprinter in town. Kev, move over.
Move over. I need that 35.
I mean, you just can't put anything past him, can you?
Let's conclude this podcast on the, of course, the Vuelta is not finished and it's still on SBS, but there's the World Championship in Montreal happening soon after.
Yeah.
First of all, fantastic, the world being back in, you know, the America.
Yeah, North America.
America.
And Montreal is such a cool city.
They've got Grand Prix. They had the Grand Prix Quebec in Canada. Yep. There's some really vivid racing and many crits, actually, in North America and in Canada. But that's just going to be a fantastic World Championship. And Pog's not going to be there.
No, so... And with Pog not being there, yes, it opens up the men's a bit, obviously. But you know what I'll still say? And it's like... Last year, Magdalene Veillet, the Canadian. She gets to defend her crown. The women's are still going to be so open, I think.
Yes,
100%. Who can win? The men's a little bit, but, you know, Vanderpoel, Van Aert, Mads Pedersen, there's going to be a few others.
Paul Sexas. Don't rule out Paul Sexas.
Sexas is guaranteed.
The rumours is that he's going, so don't take him out.
No, 100%. And... what about Matthew Brennan?
Yeah,
exactly. Brennan can get around. Like, he's proving that he can climb. So, no, they're going to be amazing. They are going to be really, really good. The world's both men and women.
Yeah, there's already a lot of rumors as well of how Belgium will behave because they've got Van Aert. There's a
Remco.
We presume. So a lot will be done about how much. They do some work from the beginning. There's some rumors saying they want to ride. And Philippe Gilbert came out and said they want to ride straight away. That's on Belgium TV. They want to ride straight away on the front foot. But should they do it, depending on what the target is? You're right. It's totally open. And no one knows what's going to happen in this race.
And just staying on the Belgian theme, Lotte Kopecky. She's been doing some junior men's races.
So is
she even allowed to do it? Well, she's obviously allowed to do it. Yeah.
I mean, I titled it when we put some notes. It's a very unusual way of training in a usual way because she's done it before the Classics. She's done it before the Tour de France. She's not repeating this. At the Tour de France, she had great form for a little while. Is that a plus? She's saying racing in a men's junior enables her to be in very fierce racing, very aggressive racing, very fast racing, and very... filled out pool of riders as well. What's your take on this?
Oh, no, I don't think there's any negatives. I think, we see it. We talk about the teardrop, the crit summer season in Australia and particularly for us in Melbourne. And that's, you know, the crits that I know over the years. Ruby, Sarah, a few of the other pros who, you know, their home is Melbourne when they come home in summer, they'll race A grade or B grade in the men's. And yes, there are women's crits, but, you know, to be really fair to these World Tour riders, they need another sort of level. So they'll race A or B in men's to get that little bit
extra.
So it's
not too dissimilar?
No, it's not too dissimilar at all. And that's why someone like Lotte Kopecky is doing it.
Yeah.
And as we'd said, there's not a huge amount of races on now. And this is probably where the women's calendar needs to a bit of a reshuffle in the calendar. And I think you said before we came on air, they probably need to...
We spoke
to
about it last week with
moving
Grace.
The women's Vuelta.
The big thing, and Grace, and I'm just paraphrasing what Grace said last week, but a big thing and a big gain for the women's calendar and... it would be backed up by pretty much every single professional rider in the women's peloton, would be to move the Vuelta in a more in line with the men sort of calendar, so that we'll have a decent chunk of competitive riding at the back end before the Worlds.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the gap is too big.
Yeah, they need... And you, in all sort of planning and thinking in marketing... you would think the Vuelta would benefit from it massively.
I would agree.
Because there's less women's races than the men's. you know, when you talk about leading into the Worlds. So you would think all the best women would then want to go to the Vuelta.
Yeah.
It's not a three-week stage race. It's, well, it's 7 or 9 days. Yeah, it's still, that's a fairly long tour. So you'd want a couple of weeks at least, I think, to recover for the women, that is, to you know, to get the perfect prep. But I don't know why they don't do it, actually. It surprises me.
Going is no idea. To be honest.
Let's hope. And maybe there's something we're missing. I'm not sure. Yeah. But if Grace is saying it, then.
Yeah, there's a Tour of Britain, but the gap after the Tour of Britain and the World is quite often relatively too big. So it's interesting. Anyway, that's all we have time for today. Any other gossip or whatever?
Oh, not really. It was still hot in France. We know that. But it has been so warm over in Europe. I didn't see a cloud.
Yeah.
For the 11 days I was there, which I was quite happy about.
They're all here.
But the weather's picking up. We're getting into summer.
100%.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you for tuning in. And until the next podcast, it's of course, bye for now. And we will be back with a full debrief on the Vuelta and much, much more next time. Bye for now.